The work of this church in the world is realized through the generous financial support of all who call this place home. Along with the gifts and time and talent, ours is a shared ministry. You have a role to play here. Church membership is open to all. For more information, go to uusf.org.
And for the last couple of years, there has been a song that the Oakland Interfaith Gospel Choir performs pretty regularly that has brought me to tears every time. And I know I'm not the only one. Every time we sing it, someone inevitably finds themselves so choked up that they cannot finish it in a concert. And my turn was last month during our Christmas Eve concert. The premise of the song is simple enough, shared in the very first line, which we sing in a quiet unison. I refuse to believe that my troubles or my problems are bigger or greater or stronger than my God. With its roots in the Black gospel tradition, this song has found a way to minister to and through members of a choir whose beliefs range from Christian to Jewish to Muslim to atheist and to allegedly baseball. We may not all pray to God, and some of us may not even pray at all, a reality that we as Unitarian Universalists know and sometimes uncomfortably wrestle with quite well. But what we do share in common, particularly with this song, is an understanding that there is something greater, something more powerful, something more all-encompassing in our lives than the forces that would seek to trouble or harm us. To some, that may in fact be that singular God. To others, it may be compassion, community, the universe, multiple gods with many names, something beyond any name, the spirit of life, or in one word, love. Whatever we call or don't call it, woven between the words of this song called I Refuse, is a belief that no matter the magnitude of the trials and disappointments of today, they pale in comparison to the infinity of possibility. That no matter how much the troubles of our lives or the horrors of our world try to convince us that we are alone in our struggles, it is impossible to sever every connection we have to someone or something that is journeying with us. That to refuse, to resist that myth that there is nothing more powerful than our troubles or problems is, in fact, how we create something that is. In faith-rooted organizing, resisting the myth of powerlessness is at the core of every campaign, every strategy, every action, every tactic. As part of the National Side with Love staff team at the UUA, all of the trainings, the mobilizations, the worships, the gatherings, the Zoom calls, the organizing guides, the frameworks, and more that we create would not exist if Unitarian Universalists believed that myth. The way I see it, our specific offerings are not the primary way that we practice resistance. Rather, it is our entire existence that embodies our faith's understanding that we have the power to create lasting change. We, Side with Love, the UUA, Unitarian Universalists, resist by being and grounding ourselves in a steadfast belief that love prevails, even if at this moment it appears impossible. But that resistance is only successful when we choose to practice it together. The myth of our powerlessness thrives when we give into division and isolation and scarcity. Our resistance, our power to create lasting change, depends on our faith in each other, our commitment to turning to and providing for one another in community, especially in those moments when circumstances feel insurmountable or all hope feels lost. One of my favorite examples of this deeper resistance comes from a text that I refuse to let the myth of powerlessness claim, the Christian New Testament. Some of you may be familiar with the story of the loaves and fishes, also known as the feeding of the 5,000. It tells the tale of Jesus and his disciples finding themselves among a crowd of 5,000 people, and the disciples insisting that they didn't have enough food to feed everyone, possessing only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. Well, despite, or perhaps because of that reality, Jesus told them to break what little they had into pieces and distribute them among the crowd. And as the story goes, somehow, miraculously, everyone was well fed, and they ended up with 12 baskets worth of extra food. What is sometimes overlooked in this story's retelling is what happens immediately before this crowd gathers. Jesus learns of the murder of his best friend, John the Baptist, by the hands of the state. He and his community experience both a tremendous loss and a terrifying reminder that those in positions of political power will stop at nothing to silence or disappear them. It is while they are processing this grief and terror that those 5,000 people come and serve as a reminder of a community that believes in something more powerful than the tyrants of their time. And in one of the most difficult and hopeless moments of his life, Jesus chooses not to turn them away, but to welcome them, to trust that together they will provide whatever is needed for everyone to be nourished that night. And that choice to turn towards community, embodied by his resistance to the myth of powerlessness, unlike his disciples, who said they should turn away the gathered crowd. When they argued, "What is 5 loaves and 2 fishes among so many?" the disciples assumed that their particular capacity was all that the community had. Rather than lean into possibility, they fell into that myth of powerlessness, driven by scarcity and isolation. In their moment of hardship and uncertainty, they only observed the difficulties of their reality and failed to explore the very real opportunities that the community coming together could truly offer. Come on, did they really think that others had traveled from far away and wouldn't have snacks? Those disciples really didn't think that assumption through, because who here goes on a hike or a trip and doesn't pack a granola bar? And I'm guessing none of those disciples were parents, because I don't know about you, but I would never leave home without an extra bar or fruit snack for my black hole of a stomach toddler. The people that came to that spot in that story came because they believed in something greater than the troubles and oppressions that they were experiencing. They knew the reality, their reality, all of their reality, and chose to come together not in spite of, but because of it. Because they knew what was among their 5,000, a community that not only believed in generosity, transformation, interdependence, and love, but would also practice those values in faithful resistance. So whether you find meaning in the Jesus stories or not, choosing to assume our communities have the power and capacity to face this troubled and puzzling world is still important. Resisting the myth that we cannot make real, sustained, collective change, and choosing to engage in those concrete actions that create the micro moments of transformation, that's not just bringing about the world with love at the center. It is a world with love at the center. When we resist falling into the belief that the way things are is unchangeable and instead lean into our power, we are making that tabbouleh that will feed hundreds. We are making that peace deeply embedded in the chaos. We are creating a world where there is no your people or my people, but our people. We are embodying the love that we somehow know will save us, all of us. And I know that these days it's a heck of a lot easier to stand up here and speak about resisting the myth of powerlessness than it is to actually believe and embody it. We live in a country that is so unapologetically proud of its fascist leadership, it is criminalizing being anti-fascist. Our kids have to learn active shooter drills starting as early as preschool. Our neighbors are being kidnapped in broad daylight. The scale and frequency of climate crises is growing at an alarming rate. Our healthcare system is not only rapidly deteriorating, it is now hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars more for the average family to get some semblance of coverage. And we are entering the third year of a genocide in Palestine funded by the tax dollars that could pay for our healthcare. And if this week's flagrant violations of domestic and international law by the Trump administration in Venezuela is any indication, we are speeding down a path of imperialism that is as reckless as it is evil. And so how can I have the audacity or even the naivete to tell us that as long as we have the power, we do, when all around us we are witnessing and experiencing the opposite? Because I not only refuse to believe that my troubles or my problems are greater than my God, I have proof. We all do. In that long arc of the moral universe, this concept that was popularized by Martin Luther King Jr. comes from one of our universalist ancestors, the Reverend Theodore Parker. As a pre-Civil War abolitionist, he shared it as a reminder that even if this particular moment feels hopelessly beyond our control, history clearly and repeatedly tells us otherwise. Look at the facts of the world, Parker writes. You see a continual and progressive triumph of the right. I do not pretend to understand the moral universe. The arc is a long one. My eye reaches but little ways. I cannot calculate the curve and complete the figure by the experience of sight. I can divine it by conscience. But from what I see, I am sure it bends towards justice. Things refuse to be mismanaged long. Jefferson trembled when he thought of slavery and remembered that God is just. Ere long, all America will tremble. Time and time again, our world has shown us that what is just and moral does win out. Our communities show us that they are capable of acts of care, great and small, from the subtle and courageous tactics of the Zwölf Circle in Germany to the over 200 people of faith who shut down an ICE facility in San Francisco last month, to the mutual aid networks that fed families when SNAP assistance was halted, to the faith communities that welcome and affirm people of all gender identities, to the meal trains that set up to support families going through medical emergencies, to the rematriation of lands by indigenous communities, and so much more. We are the result of several millennia's worth of proof that tyrants do, in fact, tremble. That a gathered crowd has more than enough for everyone to be fed, and that there is hope and enough resistance in us to create a world where love prevails. And I personally have proof from where I sit on this moral arc of the universe that the future does in fact get shaped by our collective power, our care, and our love. because when my child has finally agreed to eat those long, thin, soft noodles that they insist we cover in pink sauce, and I find myself exhausted from the ceaseless negotiations and adaptations of their meal, they inevitably hand me their fork and say, "Nami, you want some?" And of course I say, "Yes." Because in that moment, we remind each other that we are not alone. In that moment, we are able to feed each other and remember that no matter the hardships or struggles we face, there is always a chance to choose care. In that moment, I see a glimpse of the world that could be, and they feel a glimmer of their power to make it so. May we all see and feel that together.
I'm Hannah Clements Hart, and I chair the committee formerly known as the Nominating Committee. We're now calling ourselves the Nominating and Leadership Development Committee. Our official responsibility is to identify and nominate candidates for the Board of Trustees and for our own committee. Over the last few years, though, our role has evolved to encompass cultivating a more inclusive invitation to all members to contribute their diverse gifts and talents to a range of leadership roles in our community. So over the course of this month, culminating on the MLK Sunday, you'll hear reflections from members with a variety of leadership experiences, both within and outside our society. We hope that our reflections, their reflections, inspire you to be leaders in our movement and our community. The first step of leadership is showing up. Lucky you, you already did that. 15 years ago, my spouse, Reese, and I showed up with three young children seeking a community of values. I learned pretty quickly that there would be no free ride, though, as someone immediately pounced on me, I would say, asking me to teach an RE class with our amazing Christine Patch Lindsay, a real treasure in the community and in the RE program. One thing led to another. I joined and then chaired the Family Ministry Committee, deepening my relationship with other parents and with Reverend Allison. Howard Oringer invited me onto the Canvas team, and I helped Gino plan the all-church retreat. It felt good to contribute. I also served a partial term on the board at a time of turmoil in our community, which helped me understand and appreciate the challenges of lay leadership of this institution. Showing up to cook and serve meals at the winter shelter led to joining the steering team. You'll be hearing more about opportunities to volunteer in the coming month. And showing up for the food pantry turned into helping lead that ministry. At each step, I was moved by a desire to serve and to build community. And when a gap opened up and something was needed, I found myself in a leadership role. In this way, I deepened my understanding and commitment to our shared missions, gained new appreciation for the complexity and trade-offs involved in every decision, and developed deeper empathy for the hard choices leaders face. I've also made friends and strengthened my relationships with our ministers through working shoulder to shoulder. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Alongside the joys and rewards of leadership, I have also felt the burdens of being depended on, setting meeting agendas, recruiting volunteers, being responsible, sweating the details, Many of you know those experiences well. The theme for this month is resistance, and for me, my leadership journey at UUSF has required that I confront my own internal resistance. I don't always want to show up, especially at 5 a.m. for the shelter on a cold February morning. Heck, sometimes I don't even want to get out of my jammies to come to worship service at 11. Thank you, live stream. But I'm always glad when I do. I also encounter another form of internal resistance, my own doubts about my abilities and my worthiness as a leader. Who am I to claim to lead? But then I think of my ancestors who were called to lead in much more trying times. In Nazi Germany, my mother's father, Otto Kiep, was a privileged German who could have complied and stayed silent, but instead he was part of the Solf Circle, recently documented in the book called The Traitor's Circle. They spoke the truth of the evils of Hitler's regime and worked to undermine through acts big and small. One of his companions practiced non-compliance by habitually carrying two shopping bags so that she would not have to make the Nazi salute. Resistance, just like leadership, takes many forms. Together at UUSF, we are involved in the collective project of constructive resistance that is bearing witness to the hard truths of the world, siding with love in the face of inequity and cruelty, and seeking to create a more just and loving world. We all have a role to play.